TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Junk in space, the world's largest garbage dump. How will it affect space travel and tourism?
Dragon, SpaceX, for possible conjunction.
Yes, Sarah, go ahead.
For awareness, we have identified a late-breaking possible conjunction with a fairly close miss distance to Dragon. As such, we do need you to immediately proceed with suit donning and securing yourselves in seats. We will be erring on the side of caution to get you guys into a better configuration.
Okay, we're getting in the suit and we copy all.
You just heard a call from the core to the crew aboard Crew Dragon. They were in their pre-sleep period getting ready for bed, but they've asked them to put on those suits in preparation for a possible maneuver to avoid conjunction, meaning that there may be something that could come in contact with the Crew Dragon.
That was part of the live transmission from Mission Control of the launch on April 23rd, 2021. Of the SpaceX Crew Dragon Endeavour to the International Space Station. The crew was being informed by Mission Control of an incoming piece of orbital debris that would pass close to their spacecraft. They were told to cover the windows with Kevlar blankets, put on their pressurized flight suits, and get into their seats just in case there was an impact that caused a loss of air pressure. Even though the Elon Musk organization, SpaceX, later said that this was a false alarm, preparations for space junk collisions are now routine. Meanwhile, at their point of destination, the International Space Station crew, in a routine inspection, found that their Canadarm had been pierced by a piece of space debris during March 2021. But remained operational. That's the robotic arm that's used to deploy payloads and maneuver astronauts for outside work on the space station. On July 11, 2021, Richard Branson became the first billionaire in space. He said, "The trip was aimed at showing the safety of traveling to and from space, in an attempt to spur a space tourism industry," end quote. And you can now sign up for future ticket sales on virgingalactic.com. The Virgin Galactic spaceflight with Branson on board stayed safely below the swirling trajectories of debris in low Earth orbit. They avoided being hit by a broken-down satellite or fuel tank or even a nut or bolt, traveling at 17,000 miles per hour. But just about 50 miles above the Virgin Galactic's turning point, according to NASA, the rising population of space debris increases the potential danger to all space vehicles, including to the International Space Station and other spacecraft with humans aboard, such as SpaceX's Crew Dragon. NASA posted this morning on their website on May 26, 2021. Low Earth orbit is now viewed as the world's largest garbage dump. There are close to 6,000 tons of material up there. But much more debris exists in the near-Earth space environment, and it's too small to be tracked, but large enough to threaten human spaceflight and robotic missions. And an impact of even a tiny piece of orbital debris with a spacecraft could create big problems. End quote from NASA's website. On July 4, 2021, a German think tank entitled Weltgruppe released an updated documentary, Space Junk, Fast and Dangerous. You heard some of their work in a previous TUC radio program. Here's another excerpt.
Since the very first rockets were launched into Earth orbit, people have also been leaving their rubbish there. Starting from the 1960s, aerospace activity experiences a boom. In the space race between the two superpowers, the USSR and the USA, an ever-increasing number of ever more powerful rockets are fired into space. At the dawn of the aerospace age, however, this is of no concern to anyone yet. The Apollo moon missions alone send several tons of scrap into space. Much of the debris left behind then is still circling our Earth today.
We still find objects from the early phase of space travel in orbit. The Vanguard 1 upper stage and satellite, which were launched in 1958, are still in Earth orbit. That's essentially the oldest space junk to be found.
The remnants of a particularly adventurous plan also originated from that time. The U.S. military wanted to use hundreds of millions of copper needles to create an artificial ionosphere around the Earth. The project, known as West Ford, failed. The clusters of copper needles, however, continue to clutter the orbit to this day. In 2007, China raised tensions by destroying one of its own weather satellites. The Russians and the Americans also tested such anti-satellite missile systems, but their targets were in lower orbits. Within a few months, the debris burned up in the atmosphere. The defunct Chinese satellite Fengyung-1C, however, was orbiting at an altitude of 850 kilometers. As a result, China's space weapon test scattered an estimated 40,000 fragments in orbit for a long time.
I don't understand why China decided to shoot down a satellite in such a high orbit. They must have known that the debris will remain in orbit for many, many years. In some sense, of course, the project was a show of force. They wanted to show other nations that they were capable of doing this. Unfortunately, however, it has had rather negative consequences for both military and civilian aerospace.
Then in the spring of 2019, India tested a satellite killer. The decommissioned Indian military satellite that they shot down was flying at an altitude of barely 300 kilometers. So most of the debris from the explosion burned up in the atmosphere relatively soon.
In recent decades, we've noticed that a few countries around the world apparently thought they also had to demonstrate their power in space by claiming they can play war even up there. I explicitly refer to it here as playing war and not waging war. I condemn it, of course. For one thing, we already have enough problems here on Earth. Surely we don't need to fight one another in space as well. Moreover, they generate space debris, and we have enough of that. We should take the necessary steps to clean it up instead. The ESA does not participate in any of these military projects. The ESA convention expressly states exclusively for peaceful purposes. And I also wish they would just cease.
After the USA, Russia, and China, India is now the fourth nation that can use rockets from the Earth to shoot down objects in space. Right from the beginning, with the advent of satellites, armed forces sought ways to destroy enemy objects in orbit. The U.S. Air Force, for example, also tested, among other things, anti-satellite missiles fired from aircraft, with success. But then the research program was canceled at the end of the 1980s. The USA has since focused on ship-based anti-satellite missile systems. But Russia has now resumed air-launched missile tests using MiG-31 combat jets that carry anti-satellite weapons up to the edge of the stratosphere.
Knowingly producing space debris simply by attempting to shoot down a satellite for military purposes, that's a little like polluting the environment. It can be tolerated up to a certain point, but eventually everyone suffers from it. And the same goes for space debris. Once you reach the point where you can no longer operate satellites, then of course you've gone too far.
Collateral damage from military anti-satellite weapons testing is a major annoyance, especially when a target is destroyed at a high altitude.
Although we have plenty of debris out in space these days, we shouldn't forget that space is also pretty darn big. For the moment, the probability of a collision is still relatively low. But here's the long-term problem that we're going to have. Every tiny piece of debris can collide with another piece of debris. And that will create tens of thousands of new pieces of debris. And every piece of debris is just as dangerous on impact.
A collision of two objects can trigger something like a chain reaction, which theoretically accelerates and can no longer be stopped.
There's a risk that in certain Earth orbit regions, the quantity of debris eventually grows so high that you can't really conduct aerospace operations with reasonable means anymore, because you have to make too many evasive maneuvers just to keep your satellites safe. And that can really happen. It's called the Kessler syndrome. This could happen when space debris starts to collide with other space debris, creating new debris again and again with each subsequent collision. This then leads to a sort of chain reaction, where debris creates more debris through a continuous series of collisions.
This horror scenario was developed and mathematically modeled by the astronomer Donald J. Kessler. Sustained by this cascade effect, the unstoppable reproduction of debris could rapidly destroy all active near-Earth satellites. The conveniences of our digitalized world would come to an abrupt end.
Just a few years ago, there were far fewer active satellites. What we see today represents a significant change in the way the aerospace industry operates. There are many more small satellites today. Satellites you can purchase almost off the shelf, or whose components are commercially available and can be used to assemble satellites, almost like with a modular kit. That would only be a slight exaggeration. And that's why the number of active satellites in Earth's orbit is so much higher today than it was maybe 10 years ago.
The best way to reduce space debris is to bring the worn-out satellites back to Earth. And that's what they do anyway, sooner or later. It's only a matter of time. An object orbiting at an altitude of 160 kilometers falls back to Earth again within 24 hours. For satellites in a 36,000 kilometer high geostationary orbit, however, it takes longer, several million years. But they all come back eventually, without exception. There are re-entries every day as a result, and most objects burn up completely in the process. But some pieces of debris survive the ride through the atmosphere. Tanks made of stainless steel or titanium are the most common examples. The largest known piece of debris in space is the defunct environmental satellite Envisat.
Envisat is a relatively large satellite, a very complex instrument. A very complex satellite, about as large as a minibus. Yeah, roughly the size of a VW bus, in that range. Because it's so large, if Envisat were to be hit by debris, the impact would produce a very, very large quantity of debris. So that means the risk potential in the event of an impact is higher than with a small satellite.
The defunct ESA satellite orbits the Earth at an altitude of a little over 760 kilometers. Since 2012, scientists have lost all control over this 8-ton boulder. Because Envisat is traveling in an orbital region with a particularly high object density, it constitutes a serious danger.
Envisat is a real problem because it will take a really long time for it to come back down. But nature is helping us out here because residual air up there creates drag that causes the satellite to come back down very, very slowly. Although it will take Envisat 150 years, it will indeed come down eventually. All other satellites come down faster and then even burn up in the atmosphere. Not completely, unfortunately. In some cases, scraps remain that then fall to Earth. Do they represent a danger to us humans? No. If every human on the planet stood close together, we would just barely cover an area the size of Lake Constance. And it's certainly highly unlikely that a piece of debris would just happen to fall into Lake Constance. Nevertheless, that means we have to bring as many defunct satellites back down as possible. And one perfect example was the Mir space station. It was still controllable, and the Russians managed to make it fall into the Pacific Ocean.
The Russian space station Mir is the largest man-made structure ever removed from space. Launched in 1986, Mir reached the end of its service life in 2001. Mir was one of the greatest successes of the Soviet aerospace program. And prior to the establishment of the International Space Station, it was humanity's only continuously manned outpost in space. After the station was abandoned, the Russians could not simply leave the 124-ton uncontrolled structure in orbit.
The Mir space station occupied a very low Earth orbit at an altitude of about 400 kilometers. Such objects are also then brought back down to Earth. But that means we want their entry to be controlled, of course. So we reduce the object's orbital altitude, either by natural means or with rocket thrusters, till it reaches a sufficiently low Earth orbit. And then we fire rocket thrusters to actually cause the object to crash. And that means a controlled fall in a controlled corridor. With the Mir station, for example, this was carried out by a docked Progress module, which then ultimately made the final burn, as they say, that brought the Mir station into a controlled re-entry.
With an object the size of Mir, uncontrolled re-entry would have been too great a risk. Under the direction of the Russian Space Agency, the complex recovery mission starts on March 23, 2001. With several precisely targeted thrust maneuvers of a docked Progress spacecraft, the station is pushed into a lower orbit and then deliberately forced to crash. Mir enters the Earth's atmosphere over the Pacific Ocean. The station breaks up. Its separate pieces burn up in the sky. Falling remnants of Mir are scattered across 1,500 kilometers of ocean, far from civilization. The mission is a success. A controlled crash is also the fate in store for the International Space Station. The final decision on its decommissioning has yet to be made, but in the end, most of the ISS will also burn up, and the rest will fall into the Pacific.
No doubt it's so large that some of it will beat the odds and make it all the way down. The whole thing won't burn up. It's the heaviest components that probably won't have that satisfaction. But the International Space Station has no radioactivity-based energy sources. So you might say there are no dangerous batteries on board. In that sense, what comes down then won't actually pose any danger anymore.
It remains to be determined whether a Russian or an American spacecraft will give the mortal blow that sends the International Space Station falling toward Earth. But its deorbiting scenarios are already under development.
To hit an intended crash site with pinpoint precision, that's really a high art that only very few people ever master. And that's why many satellite operators use another method. Simply bring it down and pray. Well, that works too. Meanwhile, there are more and more satellites in space, large and small. The small ones are not a big problem because most of them burn up. Only the large ones might become a problem. But the operators promise that in the future, they will systematically pull their satellites back down at the end of their service life. The question remains, can anyone put a satellite in space? The answer is yes, as long as that citizen's government says yes, because that government ultimately bears the liability for it.
The space surrounding the Earth has become a huge economic zone. The data from space are highly coveted and promise good profits. Highly complex technology can now be housed in tiny packages. Using that approach, more and more mini-satellite designs are being developed for specialized applications. The prices of these tiny satellites make going into space attractive, even for private companies.
We see that companies like Elon Musk's and also Amazon, among others, are thinking about constellations in order to have full coverage of the Earth. For example, for telecommunications or for Earth observation or navigation. These are very interesting approaches. But just now, when we're thinking about sending hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of additional satellites into space, that's really when the issue of space debris becomes more important than ever, even more exciting and even more crucial to develop technologies that also ensure the purposeful avoidance of space junk now, and not to just wait around happy as pie for the next 10,000 satellites.
There are strict rules in the satellite business, but not everyone follows them. When its application for approval to launch four test satellites was rejected, The U.S.-American startup Swarm Technologies just went ahead and launched them into space from India anyway. The FCC, the U.S. regulatory agency with authority over broadcasting, satellites, and cable, was not amused and slapped a $900,000 fine on the young entrepreneurs. Swarm Technologies has since obtained all necessary approvals and promises low-cost data exchange between devices on the ground via its SpaceBee satellite network. Data from space also open up brand new opportunities in land management. Information applicable to soil analysis or irrigation, for example, or for the networking and control of agricultural machinery.
The downside of having many small satellites is that maybe one gets left behind or one of the little guys breaks down and then I produce space junk again. The trend is perfectly understandable, but so is the trend that in the end we also think about the waste and then dispose of it properly.
The future indeed belongs to constellations of small satellites. Space is open for private entrepreneurs. And more providers are supplying data from space for a continuous stream of new applications.
It's crucial that such constellations implement very highly reliable space debris prevention systems. Once they can guarantee that, then such constellations can also be operated safely in Earth orbit.
Networks of small and mini satellites fill important data gaps. And this is especially true in the field of climate and weather observation. They can be put to very specific uses and are nevertheless relatively inexpensive, rapidly equipped, and easy to operate. And because they orbit very close to the Earth, they're exposed to less cosmic radiation. Satellite clusters provide exhaustive data collection, and meteorologists are particularly reliant on continuous and verified measurements.
What can we do about this space junk problem? It's actually quite simple. We have to clear away these old dead satellites, because when they're hit by a piece of debris, they fling apart into more debris. That's why the Americans have established an Orbital Debris Program Office. But it's just a paper tiger. It has no substance. The ESA is actually better. It has planned a concrete mission, the so-called Clear Space One. And with it, they want to bring an old rocket part of a Vega rocket back down from orbit.
With Clear Space One, a private company has been contracted for the first time to recover a piece of debris from space. The first active cleanup mission in space. It is a test that will remove from space an adapter piece weighing about 110 kilograms. And the mission is also conducting research on a possible future market. Satellite operators could be obliged to bring back their satellites themselves or have a contracting company recover them for a fee.
Space agencies have discussed the topic of space junk among themselves time and again for many, many years now. Most of them say, we're monitoring, we're monitoring, we're monitoring. But monitoring still isn't disposal. And that's why, at the meeting with the ministers in 2019, I proposed to launch an actual mission now to genuinely reduce space debris.
There is no doubt that the ever-increasing number of satellites launched into space will cause serious problems in the future. And the most reasonable approach to solving that problem is to bring defunct satellites back to Earth.
If we could find a way to bring this space junk closer to the Earth, into the outer atmosphere, then the outer atmosphere, the drag, would slow it down anyway, and then sooner or later it would enter the atmosphere and burn up. That would be the most elegant solution.
Small rocket thruster modules could lower the orbit of defunct satellites. In lower orbits, a sail would also increase drag enough to cause the satellite to fall back to Earth faster. Or the space debris can be captured with a net and towed towards Earth. But the best option would be to equip all satellites with system-specific return mechanisms.
The approach is actually to try to achieve more sustainable aerospace operations. Basically, it's no different than for us here on Earth. When I avoid creating waste in the first place, or when I can use my systems longer, that's better than throwing things away and then having to clean up afterwards.
One successful example of extending the useful life of a satellite is the so-called MEV, the Mission Extension Vehicle. This probe is used to reactivate satellites that have run out of fuel but are otherwise still functional. In February 2020, this mini spacecraft successfully docked with the Intelsat 901 communications satellite and extended its life by 5 years.
What do we have to do to get this space junk problem under control? Well, we have to clear away all these dead satellites. This is technically feasible, but awfully expensive, because there are so many of them, and that's precisely why all space nations are holding back. But there's cause for hope, the Clear Space One mission of the ESA. What do we do with the many small pieces of debris? Well, there's nothing we can do about them. We can only wait until they come back down. And if we do nothing at all, we'll have a huge problem. Then the Kessler effect will overwhelm us. Then we'll have so much debris that we'll no longer be able to operate aerospace programs at all. Nobody wants that. So we have to act.
Satellites allow people the world over to communicate, transmit television signals, and maintain our networks worldwide. Earth orbit has long since developed into an economic market, and the available room around the Earth is gradually becoming scarce. More and more satellites in space are leaving more and more rubbish behind. Space junk. Year after year, this raises the risk of collisions involving satellites and their remnants. We are putting our aerospace programs themselves in danger, and along with it, our modern life in the digitalized world.
That was the closing section of the German documentary Space Junk, Fast and Dangerous, produced by the Welt Group. The Welt Group is part of the German media house founded within the estate of the ultra-conservative German media czar Axel Springer, published on the YouTube channel of Welt on July 4, 2021. This documentary contains some of the most recent data and statistics. This is the conclusion of a one-hour survey on the status of space junk and how fast and dangerous it can be. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.